What up? We are back again for another great episode. And ladies and gentlemen, it is training camp, man. Football is back. We are 1 week away from the Hall of Fame game. Football will be fully and officially back. But of course, I'm here with my guy, Matt Okada, man. I mean, how is it going?
Is it way too glass half empty, Laquan, to kind of feel nervous that football is this close to being back, because that means it's that much closer to being gone again? Because yes. That's how I feel. You know what I'm saying?
I'm just happy we have some news to actually talk about. There's topics that could be dissected. It could be flipped narratives. There's a lot that can be talked about now because these guys are back outside. Training camp is here. And man, we have a lot to iron out today, man. I mean, look, I hope you got your big boy pants on, man, because there's a lot of news that we need to get into. But first off, I mean, honestly, Okada, how was your morning yesterday? Not this morning, but how was your morning yesterday? Because as West Coasters, we're over here, we're waking up the crack of dawn, and we get this Justin Fields news. Like, Okada, was your morning shook just like how mine was?
It was kind of shook, mainly because we heard the term cart.
Cart?
Yeah.
Injured?
Yeah.
Ow.
It's not a great combo. So I was a little worried. The overall initial reaction was not too bad. Like we didn't think he had torn his ACL or anything. Yeah. And then it's only gotten better since then. So now we know it was like a dislocated toe, and he's already back at practice hopping around. So I'm not too worried about this. I mean, obviously there is, it's kind of one of those reminders. Sometimes we get reminders in training camp. Mm-hmm. And this is just one of those reminders that quarterbacks that run the ball a lot tend to maybe take a little bit more bang up than other guys do. So it's always a little scary, but I think he's okay for now.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I know the fantasy streets were waking up on the West Coast like, yo, what the heck is going on? Garrett Wilson, oh no. Mason Taylor, put him in the grave. There's no fantasy relevance here if we don't have Justin Fields on the field. But I do think now that, you know, we have the actual report and we see him out there signing autographs today, happy, kissing babies, and out there back practicing. So thank God the fantasy streets are safe from the Justin Fields Jets curse. But now, we move to New York. Now, there's some reports out there right now that Jackson Dart is looking really good. He had his best throw of the day today. And the back of the end zone to your boy, Okada, to Cam Scataboo.
Hey, yo. Okay, well, first of all, you know I'm all in on Jackson Dart and Cam Scataboo because I had Jackson Dart in our Crazy Comps podcast. Mm-hmm. And I have Cam Scataboo everywhere. In fact, I think Cam Scataboo's name was on my whiteboard during that podcast. Here's the thing. I don't expect Jackson Dart to start the season as the starter. I like hearing this because it gives me confidence that if and when he takes over, it will be a decent debut. But I honestly think it is most likely that Russell Wilson starts the season and the Giants lose all but one or two games and hit their bye, and they're like, okay, it's time to try out this kid, and they bring in Jackson Dart. So I wouldn't get crazy about drafting Jackson Dart right now, unless obviously you're like in a 2QB league or in best ball. I have a few best ball drafts that I'm snagging Dart in like little cute little stacks and hoping that he comes around for playoffs. But for the most part, I think Russ early, maybe Dart late. And Scataboo everywhere. Give me some psychic. Give me all the
time. I was about to say, what about your boy Scataboo catching balls in the back of the end zone? But that's good It's good to hear that backfield is having a little bit more clarity of identity of what they're going to be doing if we have in the back of the end zone Cam Scataboo catching balls from Jackson Dart. But I got to ask you, Okada, because in the same week, we're seeing Russell Wilson and Malik Nabers making some type of bond, making some type of chemistry there where that deep ball, it looks good, man. You know about it, Okada. What if Rush cooks all season long?
I don't trust Russell Wilson at this point in his career to be good enough to elevate what is a horrible Giants team high enough to keep the job all year. That's basically where I'm at. Like,
wow.
Even if he takes a step back forward from what he's been the last couple of years, which was not particularly great, I don't think it's going to be enough to uphold this awful, awful team. And I think this is the right move, by the way, to start with Russ and then maybe move to Dart, because when you have a team this bad, it doesn't make sense to run your rookie out there right away and have him get absolutely blasted and lose all his confidence. So let Russ go out there, take the veteran hits, lose a bunch of games, and then bring Dart in at the end, and maybe he'll go like 2-3 and it'll be a little nicer.
My biggest concern with Russ cooking all season long is that O-line, and Russ ain't moving in and out of that pocket like he was in Seattle anymore. So that's my only concern about Russ on the sticks, I should say, cooking. And it's probably going to be a nasty meal by the time we get to that late October, early November situation. But now I want to move to the Packers, Okada. Now, Fantasy Streets, man, they keep you tapped in, man, especially if you're following the FTN Fantasy page over there on Twitter, because, man, they keep you informed when there is news being hit. The beat writers are writing, and Okada, Matthew Golden, is really making some noise right now. And one of the reports I saw, it was just like, wow. Back-to-back plays, just going out there with Malik Willis. End-arounds, deep balls, making great catches, extending out for the ball. He is putting on a freaking frenzy out there in Green Bay. I mean, what's going on with this Green Bay Packers offense?
Okay, so this is the one where we're going to take a pause. We have to take a pause every once in a while on these training camp storylines, Laquan. You all know what I think about Matthew Golden, or at least you do if you were here for the Crazy Comps episode where I called him McDonald's French fries.
McDonald's fries.
Yeah. There are certain types of training camp reports that I tend to take with larger grains of salt than others. And the reports on first round wide receiver rookie picks that the team just invested heavily in, who they expect to be or want to be good and to they want to take their wide receiver one mantle, and particularly who are small speedsters doing well in practice in little shorts, all these things together make me think, okay, well, yes, a Matthew Golden is unsurprisingly getting some hype. It's not going to move the needle much for me, because what matters to me is when everybody's out there in full pads against full defenses in full pads, players on the other side of the scrimmage, line of scrimmage who are trying to knock you out, who is going to be involved and who is going to perform? And I still have no idea who that is in Green Bay, and I don't think Green Bay does. I do think Matthew Golden has a chance to lead the team in targets, but is that going to be enough if he's seeing 15% of the target share and then there's 14, 13, 12, 11, 10 down the rest of the depth chart? I don't know. So I'm holding a little bit of hesitation with this. Talk to me when we see Matthew Golden make some big plays in preseason. Maybe even then, I don't know how hyped I'll be. The target share is really what's going to matter.
It definitely is. But one interesting report that I saw yesterday with the Packers opening up practice in 12 personnel, that's two tight ends. And obviously you're thinking like, okay, well, you know, Jaden Reed, he should be the number one, but he wasn't involved. Matthew Golden and Romeo Doubs were the only two wide receivers in those sets. And that makes me a little concerned for Jaden Reed, where his ADP is slapped right next to Matthew Golden. So I think there's going to be a divide in where this ADP might end up looking like going into week one. You know, I definitely think, you know, this is something to monitor, you know, throughout the next 6 weeks until we hit official kickoff, because I don't know, man, Jaden Reed might end up being like a Marvin Mims, where he ends up being barely on the field, just used efficiently to make these long, deep plays, because that's where his bread and butter is at. I don't know if Jaden Reed's really a full-time wide receiver, and we've always had these questions. So it's one of those things like, hey, I might be in on the Matthew Golden situation, because he might end up leading this team in targets. But moving on to where the Fantasy Streets, man, there's a side to the Fantasy Streets, Okada, that is very toxic. And this relationship that makes it so toxic between the Fantasy Streets and Kyle Pitts, you want to hear my comp? This is Jersey Shore. This is Ron and Sam's relationship in visualization. When you visualize a representation of this relationship between the Fantasy Streets and Kyle Pitts, I just see chaos, disaster, heartbreak. Because now Michael Penix in his press conference is saying, oh, you see, we got KP to bowl. It's going to be a lot of that. Of course, the Fantasy Streets are going to react, Okada. So yes, I'm just curious, are we back in on Kyle Pitts for 2025?
This is so complicated and weird, Laquan, because here's the thing. if Kyle Pitts had not come out with that rookie season that he did, where no, he didn't score any touchdowns, but he looked like a potential elite tight end of the future with his ability to catch the ball, rack up yards. If that had never happened, I don't think we would all be so stuck on him coming back year after year and making excuses for the year before as to why it didn't go well. But in the reality, he did do that. And so we can't pretend like that didn't happen either. So every year we have to deal with this. Okay, well, was the bust last year really because of those, whatever excuse we're going to make for the particular year that just happened?
Yeah.
Or was it because Kyle Pitts had a flash rookie season, but actually he's kind of a dud who doesn't have a work ethic or whatever it is that makes him ineffective year after year? This is what I will say about 2025. And I'm not going to say that I'm willing to bet on him being a top six tight end, which I have said multiple times for him, maybe too many times for him.
Yeah.
But this is what I will say. He's going as the tight end 17, Laquan.
Oh, don't do it, Okada. Listen,
we talked about this. I think we talked about this on a previous pod at some point. Like, you can go for the guys in that range who are like going to get 50 targets on the season and don't have any excitement, but maybe have a floor. Or you could go for the guy that has shown the talent and might have the target upside to be a high-end tight end one if everything finally went well. So am I drafting him as a tight end one in the top 12? No, but you don't have to. And if I'm sitting there on the board at tight end 17 and I'm in a best ball or a league with really deep benches, or I want a backup tight end for some reason, I mean, I'm kind of in a little bit.
You're doing it. You're spreading the virus right now because somebody is listening and you're like, you know what, man? I might be back in. What are we doing? Stop. Stop. We are causing more problems. No, the price, not all good money is good money. You know what I mean? Like, he looks like a cash prize at that ADP, but we know the work ethic. We've heard it. We've seen it. We understand that he is constantly given opportunity to perform, and we're giving him opportunity again to break our hearts in December. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. I understand it, but I'm not buying it, man. Oh,
it is crazy. It is crazy how he always seems to find something to pull us back in. Because like even the deep truthers were out for this season, and now maybe there's gonna be some hope.
You see it? That's what I'm saying. He has range in the virus. Like, he's grabbing folks that jump ship two seasons ago. People who were victory lapping the last two seasons, like, I told you so. They're even thinking about, oh, you know what? I might be back in. This is a virus. And again, we don't know why they keep getting back together, the Fantasy Streets and Kyle Pitts. But just know, I will not be falling for Okada. I am standing my ground. Very low exposure in best ball. Very, very low chances of me drafting him and redrafting these drafts coming up in the next couple of weeks. Dear God.
It's fair.
Dear God. Now we're moving on to another pass catcher that can't seem to put it together. Quentin Johnston still dropping passes, inconsistent. There's folks out there that are saying, what if, as if they're in the Marvel universe and they have seen the other timeline of where Quentin Johnston has become this top 10, top five wide receiver for fantasy. But man, we are here in Earth 616. We are here in reality. Quentin Johnston has not stepped up and he is still being inconsistent in camp. What is your level of concern, Okada?
Well, that's an interesting question, Laquan, because for me to have concern, I have to have hope or expectations that I'm worried about not going well. I ain't got none of those with Quentin Johnston.
Yes.
I don't care. I don't want any piece of him. Listen, I think a lot of people got a little sucked in last year by the fact that he scored 8 touchdowns.
Yes.
And you know what? Good for him. 8 touchdowns is a very solid output. Here's what I know about fantasy football, Laquan, if I know anything, and I know some things. Touchdowns are the flukiest stat in the game. Yes. And if you overproduce in touchdowns based on the volume and the area of targets and the efficiency that you have, chances are the next season, those touchdowns are going to come down. And my guy had 55 catches and 711 yards to go with his 8 touchdowns. That's not how it works in the NFL. So barring him suddenly breaking out to, you know, 50% more, 70% more catches and yards, I don't expect him to put up those touchdowns again. And they brought in good competition for him that wasn't even there last year in Trey Harris, who I really like. So I have zero interest in drafting Quentin Johnston. This news really doesn't matter to me because I already expect him to be terrible and to keep dropping passes until the end of time.
Listen, you hit the nail on the head. We are a podcast that has logic. The frontal lobe is functioning. We understand that we are not taking these chances on people who have shown us that they could be inconsistent when given opportunity. This dude had 90 targets, 90, and he is still dropping the ball. He's still not gaining that trust with Justin Herbert. And as the seasons go on, that trust fades away. But on that, we're going to fade away and go to a break real quick, but we'll be back for fire content only here with me and Okada. All right, we're back and we're kicking it off. And I do hate being a guy from New Jersey, man. I do hate talking down on my guys, but the fantasy streets, they're strong behind this guy. Very strong. One of our friends, Michael Florio, is a huge Isaiah Pacheco fan, and I see Pacheco slowly but surely ADP going to creep up once we get closer to August, but there was a report yesterday that made my eyes kind of go, that's interesting. So Isaiah Pacheco's not alone taking those first team reps. I mean, we've seen Elijah Mitchell, we've seen Kareem Hunt, but Breshad Smith is the one that we have video evidence of a lot of these last couple days during camp. Catching passes at the backfield, looking explosive. What is your level of concern on Isaiah Pacheco going into this season?
It's decent. So unlike Quentin Johnston, where I can't have any concern because I don't have any expectations, I can have concern about Pacheco because I like him. I don't know if I like him as much as Michael F. Florio, my guy, because I recognize a lot of risk with him. And so I'm not like, oh, he's a locked and loaded RB1 or anything like that. I don't know if Florio would say that either, but here's basically my breakdown for Pacheco. If he is the lead back and stays healthy, I think he is an RB1 because we've seen him do it, whether in long or short stretches, whenever he's healthy. And this Chiefs offense is a great offense to be the RB1 of, playing for Andy Reid. Sign me up for that. However, what we saw from him last year after he returned from injury was real bad. I mean, it was rough. So the question is, well, is that the new Pacheco, or was that I'm still recovering and got rushed back from injury in the middle of the season in an impressively short time span, but it meant that his efficiency and his tape were rough. I lean towards the latter, that it was more the injury. And that he will be back to full strength and that he will therefore take the starting job. And I'm not overly surprised that we're seeing some first team work from Hunt, Mitchell, and Breshad Smith, because Hunt and Mitchell have both been great fill-in, either change of pace or like handcuff backs for NFL teams throughout their whole career. And Pacheco's been dealing with injury or has dealt with injury. So I think it's a good idea to have those guys involved, and we've seen them carry the load for teams before. So I think they could do it for the Chiefs. And I think they could see that. And then Breshad Smith, I really like him in this Jerick McKinnon of old role, where he could be a very valuable pass-catching running back. And I am also not surprised that we're seeing hype from him out of camp. Because again, rookie, explosive, it makes sense to see those kinds of hype videos. I will be drafting Breshad Smith near the end of drafts, very commonly. But I will also be getting a lot of Pacheco, I think. Unless his ADP does continue to rise, like you mentioned, because I think he does have that RB1 upside if he's the lead back and is healthy.
He does, man. But how do you keep Pacheco healthy? And I think you remove him being involved in the passing game. So I think those PPR upsides that everything's being pumped, because Matt Nagy loves peppering his running backs with targets. But I think those targets may go through Breshad Smith. And like you said, at the end of drafts, I'll be leaving with some BS, a.k.a. Breshad Smith, this summer. But moving on to Seattle, man, those ops over there. I hate what they got going on over there with Cooper Kupp. But, man, I do love me some Kenneth Walker at cost, because the reports are coming out that he looks great. He's fresh. He's fast. He's healthy. Listen, Clint Kubiak was able to get career highs out of Alvin Kamara on the ground in multiple categories last season with Nola. So I'm wondering, what are your expectations with Kenneth Walker? And with him looking great and healthy and fresh, are you buying in the hype?
I mean, I'm glad to have you coming around, Laquan, because I've been on Kenneth Walker since the beginning of the offseason. He has been my guy. Honestly,
I'm coming around. Yeah.
Honestly, I have to say to Ken, I feel a little bad because I've kind of stopped hyping him up as much as I was early in the offseason because of how much I've gotten attached to DeAndre Swift. And I sort of feel bad like I'm cheating on Ken Walker a little bit with Swifty over here. So let me go back to my boy. Walker is going to be a stud for fantasy this season. There is the chance, as there is with every running back in the league, that he gets injured. But I'm not betting on that, and I'm not expecting that. And as long as he is healthy, which right now he is, despite that silly little report that came a few weeks ago that he was dealing with something already, blah, 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 he is going to destroy his ADP because he's being drafted, A, as if he's going to get injured again, and B, as if he's not one of the top 10 running backs in the NFL, explosive touchdown threat whenever he touches the ball. I am all the way in as you can be. I hope his ADP stays where it is, but I expect it to continue to rise.
Listen, you mentioned how explosive he could be. He had the number one avoid tackle percentage as for FTN Stats Hub last season, folks. He is one of the most elusive, explosive backs in the NFL. So please, I'm coming around. Don't sleep on him. I'm grabbing him right off the board as my RB1 because I am going heavy wide receiver this season. Speaking of wide receivers, Okada, we got to do a temp check in Tampa. There has been a report that came out. There is no timetable for Chris Godwin's return. So is it a Mecca Abuka season?
It might be. And this is one that I kind of have stayed away from for most of this offseason. I don't have a lot of Tampa Bay exposure. A lot of that has to do with the fact that I've harped all offseason long on Baker Mayfield regressing, which he is going to do because his efficiency last year, particularly in the touchdown department, was absurd and not maintainable. So I've kind of stayed away. And there's also the fact that there's just a lot of mouths that we really don't know who will, what the pecking order will be. But if Chris Godwin is missing, which it currently looks like he might be, at least for the start of the season, also saw a report that he'd had some kind of minor procedure recently, so that might be connected to this. If he's out, I'm rising on Egbuka. I'm not really changing on Evans, because I think Evans is what he is, and I kind of think he's on the tail end sunset of his career based on what we saw towards the end of last year, or for much of last year.
Yeah.
But if Egbuka is the guy, mainly out of the slot where Chris Godwin normally plays, or filling up those targets that Godwin would normally get, at current value, I'm going to have to start getting some pieces because I think he's better than Jalen McMillan. I don't hate McMillan either, but I think he's a better all-around wide receiver. And I think that Evans is like on the downward trajectory of his career, is an old and aging veteran. And Ibuka's a young stud who could honestly overtake Evans. So for any amount of time that Godwin's out, and by the way, there's not, you know, any guarantee that Evans stays healthy or that McMillan doesn't miss time. So if Ibuka is suddenly taking over a 18 to 20% target share all of a sudden, that's looking pretty spicy and nice. I'm going to have to start getting some of that, I think. I'm rising on him.
All right, Okada, I'm coming around on Mecca Abuka, man. Where he's sitting currently in drafts, he does look like a value pick that can fall into some huge opportunities to start off the freaking season. So now we got to go back to New York, but it's the green and white. Braylon Allen is expected to be a key contributor in this committee. I mean, is he worth moving up in the ranks?
A little bit, maybe, but I'm not convinced that he's going to take a large portion of Breece Hall's work. I think Braylon Allen is and should be a good complementary change of pace back. I kind of see, like, you remember back in like the Browns era with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb?
Yeah.
Where Kareem Hunt was pretty heavily involved and would actually even be valuable for fantasy sometimes because he was heavily involved, but it didn't really stop Nick Chubb from being really good. Now imagine that you added a bunch of pass catching work to Nick Chubb, and that's what I think you've still got in Breece Hall. So I like picking up Braylon Allen as a sleeper every now and then. He's an interesting handcuff, but I'm not gonna. It's not gonna affect my desire to draft Breece Hall, and I'm not gonna expect Braylon Allen to be like an RB2 or anything like that.
That's put perfectly. Like, I'm still taking Breece Hall, even with the hype and even with the fantasy streets reacting to this with Braylon Allen likely to be moved up. But I think Braylon Allen can be a discounted David Montgomery in this situation. We've talked about this Jets offense of what it could be looking like going into the season, inspired by the new brainiac of the league, Ben Johnson, but more so looking at where he is at in drafts right now, dirt cheap. Like, I'm getting him as, you know, a RB 4 or 5 at this point, and I'm not even looking to roster that many backup running backs, but more so looking at the situation, he has opportunity to make some noise and be a possible flex. So yeah, I do like moving him up, but we will readjust once we get more reports in the next 6 weeks. Now, the last story. Now, there's been an update on Terry McLaurin holding out. It is good news. He's doing yoga in Virginia. Like, he's close. He's home. You know, he's still around. You could hit his phone and you could just drop the bag on him. But while all this noise is going on, we're seeing clip after clip of Deebo Samuel shining in camp, looking thinner, faster, fresher. And he's making some plays in camp and turning some heads. Does this make you want to reconsider Deebo now with this holdout going on? Does he move up in value, building this chemistry and time with Jaden Daniels?
It does not make me want to reconsider anything, Laquan, because I've been a massive Deebo Samuel fan all off season.
Oh.
I said it early on when everybody was calling him fat. I was all in.
Me.
I've had Deebo Samuel as a dynasty buy and Terry McLaurin as a dynasty sell. I've written articles about how Terry McLaurin overproduced in the touchdown department last year, kind of how I talked about with Quentin Johnston earlier. Obviously, McLaurin is a better receiver than Johnston and saw more work besides the touchdowns, but he scored far more touchdowns than he should have. I think even when he, and I do expect him to be back at some point, even when he is back, I don't expect him to be a stud wide receiver one. And you know how I know not to expect that? Because the Commanders don't expect that, which is why they're not paying him like that.
Ooh.
If they thought he was going to be their Justin Jefferson or CeeDee Lamb, I think they would have paid him by now. But they don't, because in a sense, he hasn't really been that. Like, he's been around 1,000 yards most years. He finally scored touchdowns last year, but prior to that, he had not. And so it's like, he's not putting up 1,400 yards a year. Does he deserve to be paid as a top wideout? I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be, mainly because the way that contracts in the NFL work, if you're your team's wide receiver one and you're up for contract, you just kind of have to get paid among the top five because that's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works.
So I don't blame McLaurin for expecting that. But the Commander's hesitancy to pay him that confirms for me what I believe already, which is that I don't think he's going to be 140, 150 target stud wide receiver one. And if he's not going to be that, then there are going to be other options in this passing game that are getting significant work. I'm not over the hill excited about Zach Ertz at 50 years old. I'm not over the hill excited about Austin Ekeler at 40 years old. Those are both accurate ages, by the way. You know what I do like? Deebo Samuel, who is and it has always been, when healthy, a very explosive, versatile wide receiver who I think fits very well into this offense and what they want to do. Jaden Daniels did a lot of screen passes, short, quick passes. They'll do a lot of spread stuff, moving around. I think Deebo is a great fit. And I think with Terry holding out and him showing out, it really just continues to close the gap for me in their rankings. And their ADP is so wide that it makes Deebo huge value. And Terry, someone I'm not getting anyone anywhere.
I just looked up on StatsHub at FTN Fantasy, by the way, and that boy was top 5 in yards out there to catch per reception. 8.4 yards per reception, ladies and gentlemen, after the catch. And he's in the Cliff Kingsbury offense, and he may be the most seasoned wide receiver going into the season, gaining that chemistry and build in camp with Jaden Daniels. You might have sold me. I might buy my ticket. I hope they ain't sold out yet. I might be buying my Deebo Samuel ticket.
They're not sold out, trust me.
But you know, I'm not a huge Deebo fan. Obviously, he played for the Ops over there in San Fran. But he's out of the division. He's out of the way. So, you know, we're white clean, but if you can bring me some points on Sunday, that's all I care about. So, yeah, man, I think today was good, man. We ironed out a lot of the headlines. I mean, of course, there's going to be new reports. And of course, we could be here all day long trying to iron out and dissect every single little report out there. Okada, they got people out there in the fancy streets keeping stats for practice. That's insane.
Listen, the fantasy world is big, growing, and excited and crazy. So I'm not
football is back. The case.
Also, I'm just going to throw this out there as my sign off. One thing we didn't talk about in the news that has popped up: TJ Hawkinson getting a ton of targets in camp. Go draft you some TJ Hawkinson. Trust me on this
one. My number one exposure tight end on Underdog Fantasy. Just saying, but nah, this has been another great episode, man. Make sure you guys like, subscribe. Make sure you share the episode. Listeners, make sure you guys tap into the YouTube show. We come up here all dolled up. Last week, we were just in some suits. Now we're in the chill regular. We got the haircuts. We looking good, feeling good. But it's been another great edition of FTN Fantasy Show. I'll see you guys signing off. See you next week.